Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Pinball Podcast. It's April. What is today?
It's March.
Not April at all. It's March 17th. hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Pretty good. You scared me for a second there. Thought that I slept in a whole month.
Now I got a text right when I started talking, and it reminded me to turn my cell phone off, and then I just totally forgot what month I was in.
It happens.
Doesn't take much to distract me, I guess.
No. Well, that's good.
No, so what have you been up to?
Physical therapy on the ankle. That's about it. Now, I've been playing a little bit of pinball. It's going to get tough for me here because my wife and I, we're going to actually sell our home and move. We'll probably stay here in the same area, but we're looking at a house with just a bit more room, and my wife's on board with the bigger game room idea, so we're looking at houses with unfinished basements. So we
nice.
Can... Yeah,
that'd be the ultimate. You can set up your own game room from scratch.
Yeah, and I gotta take advantage of that while she's still on board. So
yeah, definitely. But, find some old arcades going out of stock and buy up their carpet and their fixtures.
Yeah, and it's funny because she kind of got real excited about the idea, and you know she's like, "Oh, I really like that neon carpet." There's a local arcade here that's got the black light sensitive carpet, and so I mean, man, if she's on board with all that, I'm going to get myself moving, so...
Yeah, take advantage.
Yeah, so my time's been spent with boxing up, you know, all the clutter, getting it out of the house. And unfortunately, it does mean that at some point, all my pinball projects are getting put on hold, and while we sell the house, we're going to leave the game room set up because our real estate agent thinks it's something that'll be memorable, but everything in the garage, unfortunately, is going to have to get kind of put on hold and moved out so that... We can show the house, but, you know, small sacrifice for the greater good in the long run.
Yeah, I guess so. I remember talking to some collectors when I was looking to buy this house, and they said, as much room as you need more. So always look for more room, because even if you plan on having, you know, 10 pins, you're going to end up with 20 someday. So
Yeah.
Good advice.
That's the one thing that... As people get into this hobby, you always see them say, "Hey, I got my first pinball machine, and I'm hoping to get maybe one or two more." And that they're never stopping at that. They have it in their mind at that point. I mean, I did when I had my Jurassic Park and I added Twilight Zone. I thought, "Oh, well, I have Twilight Zone. That's my favorite game of all time. I'm done." And now I've got over 10 of them in the house. Several more out in the garage, and I've had a whole lot more come and go. So, yeah, you never stop at one or two.
No, I wish it were that easy.
Yeah.
But I guess we're fortunate to have a lot of great pins out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No knocking that. I guess I'll move things around on the outline a little bit. As far as the location report, I've been really involved in building a pinball map for Albuquerque. So pinballmap.com is kind of like one of the bigger pinball maps. It's an app on Android and on Apple. So you can download it on your iPhone if you're, you know, out traveling and say, "Hey, what pins are in this area?" And it'll show you by game or by location or, you know, condition, all kinds of different things. So I finally got into pinballmap.com, and the guys over there have been really receptive and excited about getting Albuquerque on board. It's kind of funny having all these big cities like Chicago and, you know,
the Bay Area.
LA and stuff. Yeah, the Bay Area, and then also Albuquerque.
Yeah, I need to work with them to get Salt Lake on there, because we actually have some good places to play. But
yeah, you're always mentioning great locations around you. I was surprised it keeps track of how many games are in the area. And, you know, we had something like 50 machines and 25 different locations, so it was pretty cool. It was bigger than I thought it was. We had built a Google map that we've been using for years. And so everything had to be, you know, meticulously moved over. And it took quite a while last week, but it's done. And now it's just a matter of maintaining it. So as far as pinball goes, that's the big thing I've been working on. Pinballmap.com is the site. And if you Google pinball map, it's the first thing that comes up if you're... Or not Google it, but if you search on the marketplace on Android or on iOS, it's the first thing that comes up. It's a free app now. It used to be $1. So definitely worth checking out if you're someone who travels or, you know, you want to see what's in your area.
Yeah, And they do work with people who want to add new locations and stuff, so
mm-hmm.
be nice to help these guys get going and build up a bigger database. But for some of the central hubs, they, I mean, everyone knows kind of the top areas in the country are in the Northwest, like Seattle and Portland, mm-hmm. And they're well represented, but other than that, it, like you said, it's a lot of just the bigger cities, but...
And the local admins, like, I guess that's what I am, a local admin. Local people can add whatever games they want, but only the admins can add locations.
Right.
So I've been trying to do kind of the whole state. Instead of separating, you know, different neighborhoods, I've been trying to just represent New Mexico on the whole so that it's not... I wouldn't want it too cluttered either, you know.
Sure.
There's one pin in Algodones, New Mexico. I don't think it needs its own map. But,
yeah.
They've done a great job of streamlining it, and they're actually based in Portland. I guess initially it was called the Portland Pinball Map.
Yeah. I'll have to talk to him about getting Utah going, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. You want to jump right into news?
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about what people have given us as far as feedback on the show goes?
Oh, I'm sorry. You put up a thread over on Pinside and got a lot of great feedback on there.
Yeah.
Do you have some of the highlights you want to go over?
Yeah, and there was a common theme that cropped up. One of those would be to stay away from the arcade talk, and I guess so far we've done that well enough. We've got a pretty hardcore audience over at Pinside, it seems. But some of the things that they were asking for is more tech tips, and a lot of people mentioned that. So we'll definitely do some of that. People wanted more game reviews, and, you know, I love talking about individual games. People have asked for a little bit more structure, so yeah, we're trying to do that as well. I'll go into some of the individual comments here real quick, and this is Deacon Blues. He said, after a little thought, I'd like to hear more tech tips, maybe more machine reviews. Start reviewing machines so that you have the show's top 25, top 50, etc. Use a 10-point scale. I despise 5-point scales. So he's kind of looking that as we review them, kind of keep track of how we're scoring them so we build up our own, you know, top 25, top 50. I guess people really like those top lists. Mm-hmm. And then another one is that came up quite often is people mentioned that try not to, you know, just kind of redo what's been done in some of the other pinball podcasts. And there's some great ones out there, like the Silver Ball podcast is one that's still running. Spooky Pinball is still running. This Old Podcast ran for a really long time. Just to be careful that we don't just redo what they've done. And I think we've been careful not to. Let's see. A couple more. I'll just read another one. This is from Azterac. He says, think the show's great. You seem to be getting into more into a flow from podcast to podcast. I really like the tech tips, product reviews, and the deal that got away from the last episode. Stay away from interviews. That's been done, and I don't think there's anything left that those guys haven't talked about. Also, stick to the topic of pinball. And then he goes on to talk about just staying on topic. A lot of people mentioned that they listen to us on the commute, so... you know, hopefully we're exciting enough that we don't have drowsy drivers out there. But, yeah, I was just really grateful for everything people had to say. It kind of painted a clearer picture of what people want to hear. So, thanks for everybody who wrote something. I know there was a second thread, but I could only find the first one. Maybe the second one got deleted by a mod for being duplicate or something. But a lot of good words came out, so... We're taking it to heart, so you'll probably find in shows going forward more of that stuff that you guys requested. So,
yeah, we appreciate the feedback, and there's some cool ideas in there. I like the idea of doing, you know, a list, a top 25. You know, right now we've only got, you know, 5 pins, but you know, hopefully over time that list will grow. It's hard for me if I like a game. You know, I put Twilight Zone and World Cup Soccer on the same number scale, so I don't know, maybe that would end up with us having a kind of a weird I don't know, something different than the list that's on Internet Pinball Database, that's kind of the same top 10 most of the time. Yeah. The weird, every once in a while you get a wrench thrown in there. I remember seeing Roadshow pop up in the top 10 once, and Avatar Limited Edition was number one for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, that top 10 didn't change a whole lot. That might be kind of cool, yeah. Seeing Maverick in our top five right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? It is kind of fun watching trends. Like you said, Avatar had a lot of buzz, and people loved it pretty intensely for a little while, and then it fades down. And it's kind of fun to see that, like, okay, you know, when I see something that's kind of a flash in the pan, yeah, it's a fun game. It just doesn't have the same staying power as, say, other titles. But, you know, hey, if it's something that you can get for a good price, play it for a while and send it along, you'll probably have good experience with it. So those little trends are kind of fun to watch. I didn't actually bring this up to you before, and I don't know if you think it's a good idea or not. It's obviously too late for this month's show. But in March, obviously the biggest sporting event of the month is March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament. And was wondering if you would be interested in this, Don, and I'd handle it, but if I created a 64 machine bracket and kind of shopped it around on RGP, Pinside, KLOV, our Facebook page, and let people vote on the matchups. It'd be a lot of matchups, but we could whittle it down, and maybe we could run that. And
might be kind of cool, kind of like the character battles on GameFAQs.
Yeah, basically like that. And I've done it before, actually, with arcade games, and this was probably about 4 or 5 years ago on KLOV, and they loved it. And people got there. Some of the battles got pretty intense when you have something like Pac-Man going against Galaga, but I can only imagine the conversations that might break out on that. And when you get 64 machines into the field, you're bound to have a dark horse that pushes through yeah. deeper than it needs to. So maybe I'll put that together, and I'll seed them based on average rankings between Pinside's top 100, Internet Pinball Database's top machines, and then put together a bracket and push it out there. I think that might be kind of fun.
Yeah, that is a pretty cool idea. So, you know, I'm not a sports guy at all. I know you're a huge sports guy. But I'm actually involved in a March Madness bracket in my work. And my method for picking teams was just like, I don't know, I kind of like this place. You know, oh, I've been there before, so I hope they'll win this game.
For the people who are really into sports, they pick the games that they think they're going to win, and then they just turn around and cheer for the underdogs anyway, so...
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty funny.
End up with the prize. But yeah.
So maybe I'll do that.
Cool.
I'll try and get it out pretty soon after this show goes live. So if you're listening and you haven't seen it yet, keep an eye out. I'll hit your forum and we'll get it going. Maybe...
Right on.
Maybe, you know, I got a little surprise that'll go along with it, but I'll wait until I post it, so...
Okay. Yeah, now you threw it out there, so now you have to do it.
Yeah, so...
Unless you edit this out, I guess.
No, it's going to be cool. We'll have a... We'll let people predict their Final Fours and champions, and then maybe tie a little prize into those who get the best brackets, just like the real March Madness, so...
Cool. I'm already excited to see my wife's bracket.
Yeah.
See, she's crazy. How do you have barbed wire at number three?
My wife has probably Bride of Pinbot near the top of hers, which great game, but
too. Yeah.
Probably not a Final Four game for most. So.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
All right, sorry for the sidetrack, but
no, that's cool.
I just given the month and the theme, might as well.
Yeah, definitely. We're a month late, but it sounds like fun any time of year. We'll wait till the April, the Ides of March are over.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm jumping into news now, unless we had any other stopgaps.
No, nope.
Not stopgaps, I mean valuable feedback from our listeners.
No, that's it.
Didn't stopgap at all. I'm sorry, this very first item, it was something that was really exciting for me. There's a new virtual pin at Pins and Needles in LA. And before you stop and say, I'm sick of hearing about Don and his virtual pinball tables, this is the most lifelike virtual pinball machine because... They hooked a computer up to a real Bram Stoker's Dracula pinball machine. So it's controlled via a keyboard and a monitor. They've got a live feed of the play field. And then it looked like they were hitting the shift keys or something for the flippers. They didn't go into detail on how it actually worked online, but it was really cool just watching somebody sitting there in front of a monitor playing a real live game. So of course the next step would be internet connectivity and, you know, holding tournaments on this virtual game. And of course, unlike all the other virtual pinball machines, this table is going to have wear, and you know, it's not going to be waxed perfect for every player, just like a real tournament. Switches might go bad after so many plays. It's still going to take wear and tear, unlike a virtual table. So I thought this was a really, really cool idea. A lot of the news postings that were made about it were just kind of confusing until I went and actually watched the video myself. It just seemed like an exciting idea to me. I've seen the video of people using, you know, they wave their hand over the flippers and make the flippers flip, and kind of using different technology to get a pin to work. But I'm interested to know how they actually got this to work, and it's cool that somebody had this initiative and was able to make it happen.
Yeah, we'll put the video up on the blog, but it's just a real smart idea. I mean, I never would have thought about doing that, but I'd love to get a chance to play it. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, so we'll post the video. Let us know what you think. I was really excited by this. How cool would it be to have a pinball arcade collection of real, you know, Papa games or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just going off the rails, but...
Yeah, there's definitely some opportunities to kind of take that idea and, like you said, just expand it to other machines and then things you can put together with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A couple other quick little bits. I don't want to beat the AC/DC horse to death, but the real limited edition picks hit after our last show.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted to give a quick talk about that. I was really curious to see what they were going to do with the mini play field, the lower play field. And they took Angus's face off of the mini play field, and they made it look kind of like, I guess like hell. I think it's called the Underworld or something on there.
Right.
And it looks like a pit of flames. But there's these really weird inserts that are bright white, so it kind of looks like Iron Man's face, like coming through the flames.
It does.
So, I don't know, I guess it's not at all what I expected. I thought maybe, you know, red or orange inserts would have been different. I haven't played it, but it looks pretty bizarre. It doesn't look bad, it just looks weird. But it was nice to see the mini playfield in action. They had some videos with the white wood playing and whatnot. And the new rails and the decals and the new back glass, everything looks great. The art package, I still really like the art package. Even as I'm not an AC/DC fan, I think they did a bang-up job on all the art for the whole game. Looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about that. If you have anything to add, Jeff.
No, I just kind of agree with what you have to say there. It's a huge difference between the Pro and LE here in this one. And yeah, I just want to get out and play it. I'm hoping that the distributor local here has the LE version. I don't know if they will, but they've had some LEs in the past, so there's a chance.
I'm hoping to play one next weekend, so I'll have a little something to say, I'm sure, next episode. I'm definitely excited to try both versions. And then Jersey Jack, everybody keep saying they're sick of hearing about Jersey Jack, but they posted some pretty exciting updates since the last show too.
Yeah.
They posted some video of, I guess, the multi-ball mode or whatever.
Yeah, the Emerald
City.
So
you got the Emerald City with the balls like crashing out of the door and flying towards the screen, and the graphics look really sharp. You've got the rainbow field, which has been pretty disputed online. It's this big rainbow-colored piece of plastic in the middle of the playfield. It's an early version, so we don't know if this is going to be the final piece or not. I hated it at first, honestly, but it's grown on me. I think somebody did a mock-up again. Every time Jersey Jack releases anything, they update the mock-ups. And as a plastic, as a smaller piece of a larger game, it didn't look too bad.
Right.
But when there's this giant close-up of the word rainbow, it's a little garish. But with that update, they also released more playfield art. The art on the mini playfield with the spinning house. And you can see a little bit of the playfield art below the mini playfield, I guess on the regular playfield.
Mm-hmm.
And everything looks pretty cool to me. I'm definitely excited. It's looking better and better and better. And, you know, Jersey Jack, he's got something up his sleeve, and we still won't know what we're going to get until the game actually ships. Something else exciting as a, I don't know, as a pinball repair nerd, is they showed the underside of the game, and they showed some of the toys. They showed how the spinning house is going to work, how the winged monkey mech is going to work. And I like having, they put like the Pinball 2000 rails underneath the playfield. So when you pull the game out, you've got these big, bulky rails to lay the playfield on.
Yeah, those are so
which
nice.
I really like.
Yeah, those are really,
yeah,
really
definitely.
Nice.
There's been a couple times on some of the older games, I think on my Elvira, the playfield doesn't pull out at all, so you have to physically lift the playfield up and pull it out, which I realize those days are long gone, but when I put the playfield down to rest it, a wire might come loose or snap off, and then you're chasing down a different problem.
Yeah, or you can and pinch a wire.
I don't see any way for this happening. Yeah, pinching a wire. My friend Star Trek, one of the mechanisms that holds the playfield, you know, you pull the playfield up and it snaps.
Yeah.
And then you can raise the playfield. It's, I don't know what's wrong with it. I could never been able to figure it out, but you have to yank that thing about half a dozen times before it snaps in there. And I've looked in there and cleaned it out, and I can't figure out why it's not working. But I'm glad those days are kind of over. If I get tired, I'll just rest it down on the bars. I've never had a Pinball 2000 game, but that looks like such a smart idea. I'm glad they're using those.
Yeah, I really like them. Do they work the exact same way as the Pinball 2000? Like, can you take the playfield out and then set it down on the ground and it will stand up?
That's still to be seen.
Okay. I wasn't sure. So, like, that made shopping out my Revenge from Mars so easy. You just undo the connectors, pull it completely out of the machine, and set it on a table. So then it's chest high and completely, you can walk around the table. And, oh, it was just so nice. Shopping that out.
That would be
so
awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of people are excited about, maybe we can do playfield swaps on this one. I don't know if they'll go down that path, but that was a pretty ambitious project with Pinball 2000.
Yeah.
But either way, anything that makes it easier to work on a game, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So, again, I guess that's all we have to say about that. But Jersey Jack, production started this week officially. I guess, on Joe Balser's birthday. I think that was the 13th.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook, so noticed that.
So I know he doesn't have playfields yet, so I'm not sure what all they're producing, but it did say a production started, and it should be exciting. We should be seeing some games in the next couple months, so I can't wait.
Very much. New manufacturer officially rolling stuff off the line. It's been a while since we've been able to say that, so.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Very good.
So, upcoming events, we have a ton of them. I'm just going to kind of burn through them. March 23rd through 25th, that's next weekend, we've got the Texas Pinball Festival. You can find them at texaspinball.com. That's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The Midwest Gaming Classic, you can find them at midwestgamingclassic.com up in Milwaukee. And on the last episode of the Spooky Pinball Podcast, Charlie interviews the gentleman who organizes the Midwest Gaming Classic. And every time he did the same thing last year, he interviewed the same guy about the Midwest Gaming Classic. And every time he talks about it, it makes me more and more excited to check it out.
Yeah, same
thing. I've never been, but it sounds awesome.
Both of those are events that I haven't been to, but every year I think I really should have just gone. But for sure. Midwest Gaming Classic's one that I've always been aware of, but haven't paid a lot of attention to, but Charlie's interviews have kind of got me amped up for it, so.
I always thought it was just the arcade with a little side of pinball, but it sounds like the pinball side's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I've got from it as well.
I wish they weren't the same weekend. I'd wanted to check out the Midwest Gaming Classic, but I actually am going to go check out the Texas Pinball Festival. We've got our tickets, and we'll be there next weekend. Wow. We're flying out Friday, so I'm excited to check that out. I've heard, at first I was kind of nervous because they only had, you know, maybe 30 or 40 tables up on their site, but as we've gotten closer and closer, everybody's saying, oh, this is a big one, it's great, they've added a ton of tables, it looks like it really is going to be a nice big show, and have a lot to do that weekend.
Are you going with the possibility to buy anything? I know you're flying, well, but you could always ship.
There's always that possibility, right?
Yeah, because I've heard that's a great show as far as buying goes. A lot of people talk about good deals or just machines that they've only found there. So, yeah, supposedly it's a great one for trading and buying.
Well, I know they do kind of like a yard sale or a swap meet kind of thing outside the day before or the morning of. So I definitely want to check that out. It looks like you can get a lot of great project games there. But I'll be keeping my eyes open, and I know people like hearing prices and buying tips, and I'll have my radar on and see if we can find any good deals out there.
Good job.
Also, the following weekend, March 31st through April 1st, you got the Chicagoland Show, mm-hmm. Chicagolandshow.com. They've got slot machines, jukeboxes, kind of more antique items, but it looked kind of neat. Pinballcircus.com is where you can find information on the tournament SS Billiards up in Hopkins, Minnesota. That's, of course, Lloyd the Great runs SS Billiards, so it's known for being kind of a fun weekend. He's got free play on Sunday and whatnot. And then Pinburg 2012 is next weekend too, March 31st. So you can go to papa.org/Pinburg2012. And it's what they call a match play tournament. So it's a $100 entry fee, but it keeps you playing the whole weekend. And it's some sort of system that Bowen set up. I'm not real familiar with it because I'm not a tournament player. But it sounds like it's one of the few times that Papa's open to the public. So if you're in the area, definitely check that out. And then finally, April 12th through 15th, you got the Michigan Pinball Expo, which is mipinball.com. Which John Cozumel, I think he's putting that one on, and mm-hmm. I've heard that one's getting really, really cool. I know they're giving away a Wizard of Oz game at that show, so that should be fun. SouthCoastSlam.com is some sort of UK tournament, and then DutchPinballMasters.nl is another tournament up in that area. So if you're going to any of these shows, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, that's just the next three weekends. There was quite a few shows that we'll probably have another episode, but at the end of April, there's a bunch of tournaments that show or that weekend. If you're going to any of these shows, if you have any feedback on any of these, obviously Jeff and I aren't going to be able to go to eight different competitions in the next 2 weeks. So if you go, let us know. We'd love to hear some location reports from you guys.
Oh yeah, for sure. And if you just want to email in information, we can read it. If you are confident enough to talk to us, we can play that as well. But yeah, we definitely want to hear how these shows go.
Yeah. So. All right.
Well,
jump
then
into our featured machine, or
yeah, let's do that. And we still kind of got a little backlog of suggestions, but for some reason, a lot of people were asking about Funhouse over the last couple of weeks. So let's talk about this one.
Yeah, this is a game I've never heard of. Maybe you can talk about it a little bit.
Well, it was this little-known game that, you know, had its time and faded away in obscurity. Funhouse is you know, obviously everyone knows it's a Pat Lawler game that was right there at the end of the kind of alphanumeric era, right before the DMD machines took off, and Pat Lawler designed it for Williams, and it's got the iconic Rudy there on the playfield. But this game came out in 1990. It had a run of over 10,000, so very successful game. And, you know, had all of the old superstars of Williams in there, where Larry DeMar worked on it with Pat, John Yelsey did the art, and the sound, you know, you had Brian Eddy involved there, and I mean, just a really strong design team. You had Ed Boon and John Hay involved. For those that don't know, Ed Boon's the guy who went on to do Mortal Kombat for Midway. Mm-hmm. And John Hay did a lot of the music for some of those same era pinball machines, and as well as like even arcade stuff like NBA Jam. And so, yeah, this was a culmination of just some of the greatest talent coming in and making something really unique. A lot of people point this to the machine as kind of the beginning of the Lawler setup, where the way he sets his pop bumpers or, you know, the mm-hmm. side flipper stuff. And a lot of people really, really like this game. I think it's a fun one. And, you know, I always had a hard time finding one in good enough condition to play well. And it probably wasn't until the Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown 2 years ago that I got one that was in good enough shape to really appreciate it. But what are your general thoughts about the game? And then we'll kind of talk about, you know, what's on the field. Do you like this game?
Well, yeah, Funhouse is a classic. For me, Funhouse is kind of the face of pinball. When I first started getting into it, I mean, I always had that image of Rudy in my head, like, oh, that's a cool game. You hit the guy in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you try to make him choke on the ball or whatever. It's like, oh, what a cool shot. And I actually bought a Funhouse a few years ago, and it was in okay shape. And I just spent some time working on it, and I had a friend that kept coming over, and I think he bought a Jurassic Park from me, but he kept asking about the Funhouse, like, oh, you going to sell that one? You going to sell that one? And he just kind of kept asking, so finally I was like, all right, well, you know, this guy, you know, my friend and his kids are going to enjoy it more than I will, just cleaning it up. So I sold it. I didn't have it very long, and my wife was very disappointed that I sold it so quickly. But it's a classic game. I mean, you got tons of shots there, and as an owner of the game and having the play field up, there's not a whole lot going on under the play field. So they really packed a lot of cool shots into a game that didn't have a whole lot of mechanisms, really. He found a way to really get a lot of miles out of the budget he was given on that game.
Right.
I've always loved the art package. I think the cabinet art is some of the coolest. It's real simple, basic, but you have that giant Rudy head kind of like grabbing or biting the Funhouse logo.
Uh-huh.
It looks really, really top-notch. The back glass, of course, is cool with the whole carnival full of people. But there's all kinds of little hidden this and that on the play field. They put some literally hidden items underneath the plastics and underneath the ramps that you only see when you're shopping it.
Mm-hmm.
But right away, or in the center of the play field, is this giant watch. And it took me a while to notice that Rudy's holding the watch. It's a pocket watch. And he's kind of standing back, and he's got his hand around the watch. It's just a really cool piece of art.
Yeah, how he's kind of hold. It's almost like an effect of he's holding it up to the camera. You can mm-hmm. see.
He's holding it out towards you. It's got two plungers, which is something that is often kind of glazed over. But there's not a whole lot of games with two plungers. That was another kind of Pat Lawler staple for a little while there, where he's got a separate plunger on the left side for the. Like, I guess the bonus award would be the best way to describe it.
Right. It's kind of like a in-the-middle-of-the-game skill shot.
Yeah, exactly. It stops the game to let you take a shot, which is pretty cool.
It is.
It's got a hidden, what do they call it, the cellar, the basement? I'm getting my Whirlwind and my Funhouse mixed up.
that can happen a lot when you're discussing shot. Yeah, when you're discussing Lawler stuff, but...
Yeah.
And... Some of the things about the game that, I guess, you know, the clock and the whole way it ties into the flow of the game is pretty cool. That whole functionality and Rudy going to sleep at night, and it's just really, really neat. I mean, there stuff like that you could tell as they were getting towards the end of the alphanumeric era, they were begging for that DMD, because he's starting to do stuff that you didn't find in other alphanumeric games, like the way the game progressed and some of the modes were a bit more complex, and it almost feels like a DMD game when you're playing it. So
that's a great way to put it. When it's side by side with a DMD game, and you have people who are like, oh, I don't like old pinball, it still gets just as much play as a newer DMD game, because it just has that play field. It has a very complex, fun-looking play field.
Yeah. I actually bought one of the new play fields that Gene Cunningham put out a couple of years ago. Maybe it was only a year ago, but I bought play field because I was sure I had a line on a Funhouse that needed... I mean, it needed a full restore. It was in rough, rough shape. But the price was right, and even with the brand new playfield, I was going to be coming in at a really low overall cost. So, bought the playfield, and the guy backed out on the deal. I did it in the wrong order. I really should have bought the machine, then the playfield, but I wanted to make sure I got one of those playfields. And man, when that playfield showed up, it just looked so nice, and I just sat and stared at it. It was perfect, but just looking, like you said, the art on it is just really well done. It's extremely fun. The colors are just perfect for the theme. And mm-hmm. when that fell through, it was like a heartbreaker. And I found someone on RGP that was looking for one of those playfields, and he needed it, so I sold it. So it kind of put my Funhouse restoration plans kind of killed them for me. But I'm still always on the lookout. This is one of those machines that I really do want to pick up. It's great. I like that the upper left flipper, it's not one of those things where you just are always trying to hit just Rudy. I think far too often when people have those upper flippers, they design it to be for a very specific shot. And this one, you can use it to actually hit a pretty varied things. I know mostly it's for that little upper loop and for Rudy, but you can do some other stuff with it as well. And it's a good upper flipper shot. And a lot of times the ball's coming around really quickly, so it's a fast reaction flipper shot too. So really enjoy it.
Like the Super Dog, I remember playing the game on the Williams Pinball Hall of Fame on the Wii, and I kept going, what is the Super Dog? I keep saying I gotta hit the Super Dog. And it's just a row of targets in the middle of the playfield. That one of the best ways to hit it is with that extra flipper. Uh-huh. And it's so low, you might not even think about it.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on. A very fun game. It's hard to find them. I guess it's hard to find them in good condition without paying collector prices.
Yep.
Because most of the time people know they have something special. But you do find them in, rough but workable shape. Now and then. It's shown up a few times here locally.
Yeah.
But it's not one you're going to see every week at the swap meet. So.
Yeah, this is generally the one that if you really want it, you're probably going to end up shipping it in. They just, mm-hmm. like you said, don't show up too often. As far as price goes, I don't know what you've seen. The one that I was that had a line on that was super rough, that was $1,100, but that was really low. I think generally you're probably about $1,800 to about $2,200 for this machine. Obviously can go much, much higher if it's been restored or is in really, really good shape. But
yeah, I was thinking $2,400 for a restored game.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like I said, just general used one, you're probably in the $1,800 range, a little bit higher on some. It kind of depends where you're at, and then you probably do have to ship it in, but... is there anything that you would say to look out for if you're buying one? I personally, I think that wear around the clock is a big issue. Some of these games weren't diamond plate, some were. So some can wear a lot harder than others. But obviously Rudy's jaw can be an area of concern, as well as just Rudy himself. If he can take a beating. His eyes fail once in a while. So, mm-hmm. Was there anything else that, having owned one, that you'd point out, saying check to make sure that this is in good shape or be aware that this is a failure point? Is there anything you can think of?
Some of the biggies are the Mylar on the clock. Yeah. I rarely see a game where the Mylar isn't just warped to heck and super bubbled right over the clock. There's a lot of lights and bulbs in one small little area.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually pretty bad. There's also a lot of discoloration between the Mylar covered areas and the rest of the game. This game seemed to discolor all over the place. The cabinet decals fade.
Yeah,
so you want to kind of look at both sides, and you're looking for kind of a deep blue and... what is it, red and yellow on the side? Like a bright yellow? And a lot of times you'll see almost white.
Yep, you get that sky blue effect on the blues on the side mm-hmm. really often at this game.
The roughest areas for wear were the in lanes and right around the pop bumpers. There's quite a bit of wear. Also, the shooter lane seems to wear more than other games and kind of skips. I don't know why. It's every game I've seen has like these weird... it'll wear and then be okay and then wear. I don't know if the ball comes out of the shooter lane weird or what, but
I don't know.
That's something I've noticed on the few that I've, kind of looked over. But just, you know, just general wear. A lot of times these games are popular. They still get played a lot. So if they've got played a lot in their day, they're well loved. So just be ready for that. One nice thing about the game is that they use a lot of bold colors. So touch-ups aren't impossible if you have that skill and that talent. So don't fret if you want to, you know, try and match up colors and do a little touch-ups here and there.
Yeah. The one concern is that there are a few gradients around the playfield, but you're right. There's a lot of really easily touched up areas on it. One last thing I've noticed is that they tend to get really loose. This is one of those machines that after, you know, every 25 to 30 plays, you probably just want to bust out the screwdriver and just, you know, lightly tighten things down. I've noticed that this is a machine that I don't know if it's just because the ball moves around so quickly or what, but it tends to get loose, everything on it as it plays. So as I've seen them, like I've looked at a couple to buy, I've always lifted the playfield and just found four or five screws hanging down in the bottom where it's just rattled them. So, but other than that, it for as popular as it was, actually is holds up pretty well. As you mentioned, that Mylar is always coming off the clock. So just know that that's not something that should make you pass on one, because it's hard to find one that's not that way. Reproduction plastics and parts for this game, they're out there. You can get those, and the decals are available if you know, you get a faded cabinet and you're willing to you know, restore that. If you remember, Don, I brought one of these back from Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown, but it wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was for a coworker, and man, I wanted it. I had a hard time turning that over to him when I got that home, but he got a great deal on that. Polly's Pinball gave him a good price. So, but yeah, that's Funhouse, and I really like it. It's one that I'll add to my collection when I get the chance. I've you know, had a few opportunities that have fallen through, and it's kind of one of those fun ones to keep hunting down for me. So,
Right on. Want to do a virtual table? Played through Flipnik Ultimate Pinball.
Yeah, and this is a little bit more of a adventure pinball game than an actual table, I guess.
Yeah, this is kind of virtual pinball to a T, in that there's no way this would ever exist.
Yeah, that's right.
Flipnik is FLIPNIC. It's about $15 new on Amazon, and it's for the PS2. So you can play it on some PS3s, and Sony's reasoning is that everyone on Earth owns a PS2. So odds are you may own one. It's a game that's not hard to find. $15 new, $7 used, kind of on eBay and Amazon. But the theme is just very, very much a fantasy game. A table might have 10 play fields or so, where you're hitting habit trails from one table to another, up waterfalls, around corners, through swamps filled with hippopotamuses. there's also several different kind of skins. There's like a Tron kind of skin. I think they call it Geometry.
Yeah.
It's a very fantasy-based game. At one point, I froze the waterfall, and there was a Bagatelle-style bonsai run playfield behind the waterfall. There's a lot of arcade-type elements, but it never forgets that it's a pinball machine. There's flippers all over the place. There's pop bumpers that when you're hitting the flippers, the pop bumpers go up or down. So you kind of flip the ball by moving the pop bumpers up and down and around the game, which is really weird, and it was difficult for me to get used to.
And there's some really kind of unique things as far as the art style goes. As you mentioned, there's different skins, and that Tron one, is that the one you're talking about where it like goes flat into a 2D type of look, or I don't know?
I guess there's two that kind of look like Tron. I was thinking of the other one, but...
Okay, the more futuristic looking one. Yeah. So, the game itself, when it was... I know which one you're talking about with the Tron. The game itself was reviewed And it was real polarizing when it was released. Some people absolutely loved it, and some people were just confused by it. But it was kind of tagged as kind of a pinball adventure game. And it's interesting to me that nobody else has really tried to tackle this concept. It might have been a lot of work, I don't know, to try and get a cohesive experience here. And in some aspects, they've done a great job. In some other aspects, it can get a little frustrating. But it's pretty clear where you need to go as you're playing. And I think it's a lot of fun. I would love to see someone do this now that the consoles or PCs are a bit more capable, so you can have improved physics. But overall, to me, it's just kind of a nice, relaxing thing that you can play for a little while and sit down and just see some really weird stuff that, at its core, is pinball. It's an interesting experience. And if you have a PlayStation 2, it's probably worth the, you know, $7 used, $15 new to give it a try. I actually didn't get introduced to it until just a couple of years ago, so well after its, you know, main release time. But I think it's pretty cool. There's lots of different perspectives as far as the way that you'll be looking at the ball. There's all these different, like, goals are constantly changing. Like, sometimes you'll be trying to grab coins, sometimes you'll just be trying to get to the next area. It's really cool. I like it. It's not the greatest pinball experience, but it's definitely unique. As you know, there's some little interesting two-player modes as well. I don't know if you've had a chance to play those, but they're pretty simple. They can range from, like, shooting baskets on a basketball hoop, or, you know, there's all sorts of little things that you can compete head-to-head with another person. But I like it.
It's a unique experience. It's something you're not going to see somewhere else. And leading to the adventure aspect that you were talking about, when the ball drains, it's not always the end of the game. There's only certain... If it drains down one side, it might fall off the earth, and the ball's lost forever. If it falls down the other side, it might go into another playfield. That might be an access to another playfield. So it's kind of fun to just kick the ball around. You're not going to be a super... It's not for a super competitive tournament style, you know,
right?
Afternoon of racking up high scores. It's just kind of like, hey, I want to kick the ball around for a bit. It might be a fun gateway drug for children, you know? There's not a lot of a risk and reward there, so they can kind of have fun. And, oh, there's a bird carrying my ball around. And sometimes you can make the ball jump on habit trails to collect coins and stuff. I don't know. It's worth a look. Like Jeff was saying, you know, it's $15. I wouldn't expect a $60 experience out of it, but it's fun to kick the ball around. So definitely worth taking a look at.
Yep. So again, yeah, that's Flipnik, FLIPNIC, and it is PlayStation 2 exclusive. So you either need a PlayStation 2 or a backwards compatible PlayStation 3. But yeah, pretty fun. I'd recommend it. I think overall, like you said, it's a just kind of a relaxing, just flip around type of experience. And it, as I said earlier, it's totally unique. You're not going to find that experience elsewhere.
So that's Flipnik. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some Craigslist finds. One that probably hits home for you. I found a Simpsons pinball machine in El Paso. And it says it's in good shape. It was just recently shopped, new rubbers, a little bit of playfield wear, and I guess the kickback on the left drain is missing. They have no idea how to rebuild it, where the parts are, but they say the game works fine without it.
Well, I mean, you could always replace that. It's not a complicated assembly or anything, and, you know, they sell those. But I really love the old Data East Simpsons game. I don't know. It was the first one I ever owned. I had it in my house growing up and still have it. I actually keep it over at my brother's house, though, and my dad and I and my brother, we used to just play that thing for hours on end, and it's kind of got that Data East loop to loop, like how many loops in a row can you hit challenge to go along with the high score, and it's a good game. What were they asking for on that?
They're asking $9.99.
Okay. If it's in good shape otherwise, that's probably not too bad. it does wear a lot around just the area just above the flippers and on the drop targets that are on the right. And those are that's one of my favorite set of drop targets that ever was produced by Data East. They're nice and challenging to hit, and they're a big part of the game's progression. But yeah, I really like that one.
Okay, so for the price, it's not a deal breaker.
It's
not
I
a
would,
steal, not a deal breaker.
Right, I would probably try and wiggle them down a little bit if you could, but I wouldn't feel bad getting it at that price if the rest of it was in good enough shape.
And they offered delivering it as far as Tucson or Albuquerque for a little gas money. Yeah. And El Paso's 4 hours away, so yeah. I wonder what he means by a little gas money.
Yeah, because that's quite the drive each way. So.
Yeah, that's a ways. Another one I wanted to mention to you was, did you see the Whitewater project that went up on eBay everybody's been talking about?
I missed it. I've just heard the chatter afterwards.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen it.
It was heavily whitewatered. It looks like it was underwater for years, actually.
Oh, man.
It was a horribly beat up Whitewater. And I'll put the link. Hopefully eBay will leave the sale up for a while. It sold. And, man, it is... The cabinet's falling apart. All you see when you look at the initial picture of the game is rust. It's just everything is rusty brown. Which I know the mountains are rusty brown in that game anyway. But you got the coin doors falling off. The whole playfield, all you see is dust and mud. It is one of the filthiest games I've ever seen. Did you hear what it sold for?
Wasn't it close to 900 or something like that?
Yeah, after 34 bids, it sold for $860.
This
blows
crazy.
My mind.
For
I've heard that the seller is a reputable seller. A lot of people were vouching for him, saying he sells good games. So good for him that he sold this thing for $860. I cannot believe it went for that.
Yeah.
So if one of you out there bought it, I would love to hear why or what your intentions are with this game, because I can. There's very few salvageable parts, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
the pictures.
Sometimes you just get caught up, I guess. And in those situations, I think everybody who was bidding on it probably knew in the back of their mind that it wasn't worth $860. But it's one of those deals that are like, oh man, that thing's terrible, but for $100, I'd give it a shot. And then someone else is like, well, I'd 120, I'd do it. And then their kind of adrenaline and their, sense of pride kicks in. We're like, well, I'm not letting him take it if it's only $10 more. Next thing you know, they've made a big mistake. But, I got a Project Whitewater that's 100% playable. It's really not that bad. If you just, took it as is and cleaned it up, it'd actually be a really decent Whitewater, but I've decided that I need to change everything on it. And mine was only about $250 more than that. And that blows my mind. But, we see those crazy things happen all the time. You can only hope that it was a friend that bought it back, and there's no actual deal going there, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Project Whitewater, I would say, $1,100, $1,200 for just a little bit of work or, this or that, a little quick shop or something. That's a solid deal. These things usually go for, $2,000 and up. It's become sort of this weird, collectors like it because it's got a really deep wizard mode. I guess it's very difficult to get to. Of course, I'll never see it, but I've heard it's got a great rule set. I usually just launch the ball and it drains right away on this one, but it's also really appealing to non-pinball people because it's just a fun looking game. There's a lot of ramps and weird shots and different molded plastics on the playfield. So
a lot of fun ball movement in that game.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Really cool looking game.
So,
but, not this particular one, not a cool looking game.
No,
another quick one up in Denver. They had a Big Hurt, Frank Thomas Big Hurt for $1,200 isn't awful. But more interestingly, there's a Maverick for sale up in Denver right now.
Oh.
Which we were just talking about how they don't pop up very often.
Yeah, they don't.
So there's one up in South Denver for $1,395.
Not too bad, actually. If it's in good shape, that's if it's a game that interests you, that's actually a pretty decent price. And you probably could get it down a little bit lower. But
yeah, still got the topper, and the pictures look good. Of course, they're Craigslist pictures, but
yeah.
Well, anyway, there's a couple of local deals.
Yeah, I've got a few that popped up locally here recently. As I mentioned, the Iron Man pinball sold for $3,900 here locally. It wasn't even listed for 24 hours, so I didn't see it till it was already sold. But he was asking, it, you know, looks like it had the tournament kit and everything installed. And he was also looking to trade for a Simpsons home use only machine. So I don't know if he got the trade or outright sold it, but $3,900 is a pretty good deal for a home use only Iron Man. Mm-hmm. Someone put up a Street Fighter 2 pinball machine for $1,100, and it's been, looks, says new driver board, new display, all those replaced. So, you know, it's probably rock solid, but I just don't like that game. I know a lot of people do like Street Fighter 2, but I just feel like they had so much better potential with the license, and I don't know, I just, $1,100 is a fair price, but it just can't get me excited, I guess. I don't know. But
that, see, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I think that's a very underrated game. I think it's a really cool game. I understand the license. They could have done a lot more, because you and I are video game guys, and we know the ins and outs of the game. But I don't know, for a pinball machine, it's got some really interesting shots. It's got one of the hardest shots in pinball is that Guile shot.
Yes.
It's just very, very narrow. You got to be hair trigger precise to hit that shot.
You
got to
be on your game. Well, it's a game I actually dropped a ton of quarters back into when it was on location in the mall arcade. But as I've gotten older, I've just, I don't know, like, I've soured on it. I don't know why exactly. I just feel it's a little bit clunky, but I liked it when I was younger, but I don't know. I just don't know what it is, but
I will say it's got the worst DMD I've ever seen in a game.
Yeah, it's got pretty bad.
A very muddy, ugly, kind of boring, there's nothing going on DMD. It's just awful.
Animations aren't great.
No, it's terrible.
Other stuff, and this one showed up on Mr. Pinball, so everybody will see it if they subscribe to that. Right, just, you know, a few miles away from me, someone put a Super Mario Brothers up, and this is the full-size one, not the Mushroom World, for $1,600. It looks clean and in good shape. I actually might have to drop by and get some eyes on that one. I'm a Nintendo fanboy, and I'm not afraid to admit that, but I've always wanted this machine. I've missed a few deals on it, and I don't know how firm he is on the price, but if it's in as good a shape as the pictures make it look, it might be fair at that. I've also got a Hurricane for $1,200, fine shape. I've owned Hurricane. I don't think it's a good game at all. The back glass is the spinning back glass really is cool. It's fun for kids. It's really fun the first couple hours you play it, and then you realize it's not challenging, and you just dominate the game. There's some older stuff like a Williams Pitch and Bat that's up there for $700. Maybe, you know, interested in that. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there was anything that just stood out to me as a great deal. There's a Corvette up, but the guy wants $2,800 for it. And I know that game usually goes a little bit higher, but I don't know.
That's not awful.
Not terrible. It's been. He's been trying to sell it for a while, so there's a chance he might come down on that. And then another one that is up in Idaho is a Pinball Magic, and he wants $1,995, so just basically $2,000 for it. And Pinball Magic's one of those games that a lot of people put on their list of stuff they really want because there weren't a ton of them made. It's cool looking. It's you know, their version of Theater of Magic, I guess, Capcom's version, but. Cool, yeah,
one
cool
of the best
back
glasses I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's a really cool looking game. So, it's not within driving distance to me, but I'll watch that. If price moves down on that at all, I might consider that. But that's up in Shelley, Idaho. So, that's about all I had. But
yeah,
this
nothing exciting in Albuquerque. Yeah. Just the crazy priced Indiana Jones $7,000 and Terminator for $4,000 and. Stuff that's been sitting there for months on the Craigslist.
Yeah. There's those times when just sellers get bogged down and they're either not listing, or if they're going to list, they're going to put some crazy price hoping someone will bite on it. So.
Yeah.
But I guess that's it for fines, but...
Right on. I wanted to get into just a couple quick... I had an epiphany this week. My Judge Dredd, pretty much half the game just stopped working. Half the solenoids. Yeah, the ball wouldn't launch, and then when I finally got it to launch, I don't think the slingshots weren't working, the drop targets weren't coming back up, and there's a left shooter lane. I don't think that was kicking either. Anyway, so like half the game, so I was like, oh, okay, well that's easy, it's a fuse. Well, all the fuses were fine. So then I was starting to get a little frustrated. I started, you know, just checking out the board and whatnot, and I had a brand new Rotten Dog in it, so I was assuming it wasn't the board. But I did notice on the board, one wire just looked a little bit weird. And sure enough, somebody had put a... I guess there's like the crimp-style Molex, where you push the wire in and it kind of cuts into the wire. I don't know what those are called.
Right.
But there's also the kind where you crimp the Molex connector to the wire and you push it in, the push type.
Right.
And somebody had put a push type on a crimp connection. So it wasn't making a good connection at all. But it was just one little tiny wire, and I just cut it and, you know, pushed it in so it'd make a better connection. And everything worked great. So I had never, you know, I've been fixing games for a while. I'm self-taught, so I'm not like an expert or anything. But I couldn't believe one little wire was stopping half the game. And sure enough, 2 days later, a friend's Adam's family is kicking out all the balls every day. And there's one wire that was loose on the Molex connector on the power driver board, and I nutted that down, and then everything worked fine. So that one felt like a coincidence to me, but, you know, 2 weeks later, the game's still working great, and it hadn't been working, so I didn't change anything else. I guess that must have been it. When I chased the wires, that wire was part of the trough mechanism, so I don't know. So... The bottom line or whatever is, it's worth jiggling some wires now and then to see if you need to reseat something. A lot of the online kind of tutorials will say, oh, you want to repin all these pins and reseat all these wires. And when I was early into the hobby, I was like, man, I'm not going to chase all these wires. There's got to be something else. You know, thinking I knew better than Clay Harrell or something. But no, it turns out the guy is right most of the time. It's usually something stupid like that. It's just something isn't quite making the connection and throwing it off.
So, yeah.
Lots of fun with Molex.
One of the quickest ways to track down a problem that's a weird one like that is, you know, if you've got just one mechanism that's acting up, if you have the game manual, go and find out what color wire is driving power to it. And then just follow that wire all the way back to the driver board and find it. Just kind of feel it. Look to see if it looks anywhere where it's been pinched. Or a lot of times when people put, you know, those zip ties on, if they've cut an old one off, maybe they're a cleaning machine, they might have nicked one single wire. And then they put the zip tie on it, and it's covered up that little nicked spot, and it kind of holds the wire together, but the connection's intermittent. So I always move those zip ties up and down a little bit to see if there's any markings underneath it. But the pinched wire, that's one that can really get you. If you're lowering a playfield, and the wire kind of gets pinched in between there. Always make sure when you're lowering your playfield that you kind of tuck the wires underneath. Because, yeah, those wire issues can drive you nuts, because when you first glance at it, you don't see it. It's you really have to kind of get in and just track down that individual wire. I had that problem with my Lord of the Rings on the Palantir shot. There's a gate that opens and closes, and mine was real touchy, and it was just a pinched wire, so can drive you crazy.
Yep. So little things are worth exploring is the bottom line. One other thing I wanted to mention, which kind of goes into just a collecting tip. The other day, my wife had to move offices. She was, you know, changed her office and had to combine it and bring a couple items home. And so when I got home, I've got a Hawaii bingo machine in the garage. Uh-huh. And she had put all of her stuff on top of the glass. And the bingo, I haven't touched it. I've had it for a few months. But I make a real clear effort to not use my tables as storage or as tables, but to let them not be laundry racks and be pinball machines. Be ready to walk up to, approach, and play. And so it kind of, it was real noticeable to me, like, why is this game covered in junk? And I think that's something that kills the hobby for a lot of people is, oh, I'm just going to put these boxes here for a little while. And then 6 months later, you haven't played the game. Maybe it's time to get out of the hobby or, you know, find a different game, try and trade it or something. But I think once you start going down that road of, oh, I'll just put this here for a while, that can really put a foot down on the hobby. So I would encourage you, if you're a new collector, of course, if you're a new collector, you're hungry for games. But I don't mean to sound snobby or anything. I know some people have different space requirements than we do, but respect the game, I guess. The glass wasn't meant to hold, six dozen boxes.
Yeah, it's a good point. I've had people tell me that same thing. Like, I've been over, like, helping a guy fix machines before, and I noticed half of his machines were buried under his wife's crafts, like boxes of paper and like little card making things and scrapbooking stuff. And I was like, do you have to move those every time you play? He's like, oh, the wife's basically taking them over. They're no different than just tables now. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer.
So, that's unfortunate, yeah.
Yeah.
So the more respect you give them, I think the more the interest stays. You know, when a kid comes over and, oh, what's that? Oh, I don't want to clear it out. Whereas that could be an opportunity to, oh, let me fire it up and, you know, you can kick the ball around for a bit.
Yep.
You know, making it approachable for others as well. Maybe I'm on a tangent, but it's something that I felt I wanted to mention to some of the newer collectors.
Cool. One thing I wanted...
anything else in our buying? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to talk about one thing, and a couple of people asked me about this, and I see it asked in forums often enough that it's worth talking about, is people have asked me the proper way to approach an operator if you want to buy one of their machines. And I've done this, and I've bought machines from operators, and I think there's the first... like two things that you have to realize is that operators are people too. So they don't want to just feel like they're being used as a tool for you to get more games. And then secondly is operators see their machines as assets. Yes, they may enjoy to play pinball and games, but this is what's earning them their livelihood. So if there's a machine out there that's earning, they are going to value that differently than you might. So, for example, say they have a Twilight Zone out on location and nobody plays it, they're going to think that, to them, that machine's worth less than, say, a South Park that makes a lot of money, even though there's a huge disparity in quality of game. So, when you're approaching the operator to find out what they're willing to sell it for, it's real easy to get offended if you think they're overvaluing a game, but they're probably basing that on how much the game makes them every week or month or year. So, my main things for when I talk to an operator is first, I like to just get to know them, and I don't generally make the pitch to buy the machine that first time. Obviously, they know that I'm going to be asking about that because collectors don't just seek out operators for fun that often, just to talk to them. But one machine that I was really wanting to get, I actually just, called the guy. He was like, hey, yeah, I've been playing some of your machines, just kind of wanted to talk to you, find out you have a collection, are there games you're looking for, or are there things that you might want to get rid of. And I didn't actually bring up any specifics at that time, and we actually talked on the phone for about 45 minutes or so, and I really got to know the guy. He's really cool. And then the second time I talked to him, I asked him what he was looking for his machine specifically. I said, what do you want? And he mentioned an arcade game that I was willing to get rid of. And I was at that moment where I was really downsizing my arcade collection and buying up pinball machines. And he's like, and by the way, if I have a machine that you're interested in, let's just do a deal where, you can take the price off. You bring that arcade machine out. And that's how I got my Jackbot. And I wanted that Jackbot really bad. It was in excellent condition. And so we worked out a deal where I brought him out an arcade machine and... I paid a little bit extra to take the Jackabot home, but it worked out for both of us because he got a machine that he felt could earn better in his arcade. I cleared up a little bit of space for him, and then I got the machine I really wanted. And later talking to him, and I told him, yeah, I'd really wanted that jackpot for a while. I just didn't, you know, want to ask you about it. And he said, you don't know how many people just say, oh, are you so-and-so? I heard you own this place. I want to buy your, and then insert game here. He said, that really turns me off because I don't know if they're just going to take it out and flip it, or, you know, if they're going to be harassing me after they get the game they want every couple of months for another game. But since I took the time to get to know him, he's actually called me whenever he's getting ready to move a game out to see if I want to buy it before he just sticks it in storage. So definitely treat him like you treat the other people in the hobby. Yeah, you are kind of using him as a resource, but don't just treat him as an end to a means. Treat him as, you know, part of the hobby. They just engage differently than you do with their machines. But in the end, they did get into the hobby because, they did get into the industry because they like it one way or another. I mean, people don't get that rich off arcade games anymore. Just treat them well. And then always be willing to deal with them. I mean, they're always going to try and get top dollar out of you, but they're not going to be offended when you try and haggle a little bit. But don't push them too hard. You have to remember, again, that this is their livelihood. It's not like dealing with your buddy who you've known, you know, to swap games with for a long time. Is he actually needs this money to feed his family. So when dealing with operators, you might have to pay a little bit more than you do with another collector. And just know that. So it can be a lot of fun dealing with them. And once you get to know them, they can become a really, really nice resource. But even when they do start feeding you games regularly, don't forget to keep treating them like a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And the other side of the coin is that there might be a beater out on location that you think, you know, isn't worth more than $500. You make an offer in that range and they want triple that because it's earning for them. Even if the operator doesn't care and kids are just dumping quarters in it and getting a terrible playing game out of it. Some of the operators just don't care. They're still getting paid.
Yep.
So, and it's important to remember that too. Don't overpay for a game.
Exactly.
You know, just because you want it.
That's the other side of it, is know when to walk away.
Yeah.
Because there are always machines that pop up, you know, available in the collector community. But when you walk away from it, don't show that you're frustrated with them, because like I said, he values them differently. So yeah. That beat up getaway machine, if he wants $2,000 for it, which it's not worth, just, you know, like, oh, you know, that's a little bit out of my range, and just tell him, say, hey, if it gets to the point where it's not making money for you and you want to unload it for anything less than that, let me know. Give them your phone number and say, I'll take it off your hands. That's just out of my range at this time. And they'll appreciate the fact that you didn't stomp your feet and say, oh, you're crazy, and walk off. Because they hear that a lot. I know that from talking to some operators. They do hear that quite a bit. And then the other thing you can always ask them is, say, what do you do with your machines when you take them off route? Some of them will sell them back to a distributor. And if that's the case, tell them, well, I'll usually pay you more than that. And that's usually true. Distributors give absolutely bottom dollar when machines come back to them. So if you know, hey, I'll give you a few more bucks than the distributor will, then they'll probably keep your number. Just a few extra little ideas there. So.
Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid if you know, you go out and play a game every weekend. You know, you're playing a Bram Stoker's and the Miss Multiball doesn't work. Don't be afraid to leave a post-it note, like, hey, heads up, you know, this target isn't registering, it's kicking out an extra ball. I think it's been my experience that most operators appreciate that. They're not out there playing their games all day to see if they're working 100%. They'll just come out and do a quick, you know, quick cleaning now and then. If they see something's not working, most of them are pretty cool. They want to get them working. A lot of times you'll see phone numbers or asset numbers on different games. And some of the bigger movie chains, I've emailed the owners of the machines that are large distributors or large operating companies with all different kinds of machines. I come back a week later and the game works great. Yeah. So just a quick note or a quick email isn't offensive. It shows that you're interested in the game working. You're interested in giving them more of your money.
Exactly. I know some
most of them, not all of them, but most of them are receptive to that.
Yep, I know someone who left a note on a Jurassic Park, and he actually did put his phone number because they, as always, had the common two issues at Jurassic Park. The T-Rex wasn't working, and the control room switch was broken. And so he left a note on there and said, by the way, I know how to fix these things if you want. I can drop by and take a look at it. So he left his phone number. The operator called him up and said, you know, I've fixed that machine three or four times. It earns okay, but it's always going down. If you want it, make me an offer. And he got the machine really, really cheap. And it was in pretty good shape. It's problematic. You know, Jurassic Park's notorious for being problematic on location. So a little courtesy goes a long way. So that's a great tip as well. So, but that's all I've got.
Good deal. That's all I've got. You had a product review, though, something that you wanted to talk about.
Yep, this will be a quick 30-second product review because there's not a lot okay. to say about it. It's just one of those things that just works. I'm talking about it's Crazy Clean Foaming Spray Cleaner. This is something that I always make sure that I have in stock. I get it from pinrestore.com. It's $5.50 a can. And it's just a, you know, cleaner that sprays out kind of like a glass cleaner does. But it's a foaming type, so it'll hit your machine and then foam up. And it's safe to use on the wood grain itself. So you can do it on the playfield, the plastic. You can spray it everywhere. It's safe for the wiring. But what's really great about it is I was telling you before the show, Don, that I used it on one of those machines that I picked up that was like so grimy. It was kind of tacky on the outside. And all I did was throw a couple towels around the machine, spray it all over the cabinet, walked away and came back, you know, 10-15 minutes later, and it looked brand new. It was almost as if the grime was protecting the cabinet from fading, and then once you got that off, it was just great. And it works really well because it does that kind of foaming up. You can get it in kind of the harder to reach areas, and a lot of that will kind of drip off. It's not very good on glass. It'll make glass streak, so everything but glass, I guess. But Pinry Store says it's that, you know, he says, I spray the outside of the cabinet when I get a pin that's been in a smoking bar, and the brown gunk comes off easy. And that's not an exaggeration. My Bride of Pinbot was a smoky bar situation type of pin, and it doesn't smell even like a tiny bit of smoke anymore. And it was just this crazy clean stuff. So if you get tired of scrubbing the outside of your cabinets, this is the way to go. You don't have to do any scrubbing at all, just a quick wipe down afterwards, and it's completely safe on all of the inks and stuff on your decals and playfields. So can't recommend it enough. It's great. And we'll give away a can of this as well. The only thing is because it's an aerosol can, we can't ship it outside the U.S., so this is one of those United States only, sorry, international listeners, contests. But all you have to do to win it is just describe the worst condition machine you've restored or seen out on location. You can leave that in the blog comments for the show, our Facebook page, or I'll start up a couple of threads on some of the main pinball sites. And I may give away more than one of these cans, depending on how good the stories come through. So just let us know. The worst one you've ever restored, the worst one you've seen out on location. And we'd love to hear those stories. I've personally seen a Space Invaders that didn't have any art from about halfway of the machine down. It was bare wood. It was so worn. And the top half was about half there. But I'm sure people have seen worse. It was on location, yep. And it was still earning, so, you know, that back glass is enough to draw people in, I guess. But so yeah, let's hear your stories. And again, anywhere counts, even if you just want to email them in, and we'll read some of our favorite ones on the show next week. Cool. Or next week.
Yeah. When we had a contest, and it feeds right into it, you kind of just touched on it. Describe the worst condition machine you've restored or seen on location. Did I fade out for a second there?
No. Hang on a second. Sorry. Go again. Yeah, I did lose the last part you said.
So, yeah, for our next contest, you want to win a can, just let us know the worst condition machine you've restored or seen.
Yeah. pretty easy
to hear about it.
So, and then as far as our contest from last time, that was the feedback question. We read some of those in the beginning, so I've gone ahead and picked a winner, but I haven't contacted them yet, so I'll do that today. And thanks for everybody who gave us that feedback. It helps a lot, and that's something we'd like going forward. So don't feel like since that contest is over that we're done looking for feedback. We love hearing it.
We don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, quit telling us what we've done wrong.
And I had posted a couple places that our winner from episode 4 had still not contacted me, and it was just a miscommunication. He was able to contact us right after that. He claimed his prize. So, James, nice try trying to snake the prize from Chris, but it was shipped out, and we're good to go now.
All right. Good to hear.
Yeah. All right. So, in summary, do you have anything else to add?
Not really. Just as things are warming up, we get involved with stuff outside, but don't forget to, you know, drop into those dark, dusty arcades and drop a few quarters into the pinball machines.
Mm-hmm. You can check us out, Pinball Podcast, at Pinball Podcast on Twitter, Pinball Podcast on Facebook, thepinballpodcast.com. pinballpodcast@gmail.com, and I'm sure you'll see us popping up all over the interweb. So,
yeah, we'll look for a little bit more engagement going forward. But we appreciate everybody who listens to the show. Our numbers have gone up, so you guys are doing a good job supporting us, and we really, really, really appreciate it. Can't say that enough.
Yeah, thanks, guys, and we'll be back in a month with some reports from a couple different shows. So, thanks a lot.
Yep.